Rabbi Jack Moline has been leading Interfaith Alliance for just under a year now. In the months that he's held that position, the work of truly protecting faith and freedom in our nation has been challenging, complicated, and never-ending. I wanted to take this opportunity to sit down with Jack and look back at the year that's drawing to a close. Jack, welcome back to State of Belief Radio.
Thanks, Welton.
Okay, what's the biggest thing you didn't see coming when you took this job nearly a year ago?
That's a very easy question, and that was the reduction in civility of political discourse. I thought we had bottomed out in the past, but I am simply astounded at the places that political candidates are willing to go.
Do you know why?
I think that there is a general fear among many Americans that the America that they think they remember, which I don't think they remember well, mm-hmm. but the America they think they remember is disappearing. And there are people who I think shamelessly are willing to exploit that fear and suggest to people that there's a way to turn back the clock. There isn't. And we will either manage change or change will manage us. Mm-hmm. And the people who are exploiting these fears are willing to be managed by change.
So did learning that early on in the year really make you revise some of what you thought the first year of your term would be like?
Yes. Actually, I had no idea what the first year of my term would be like, but I have been involved with Interfaith Alliance for 20 years. I know that our issues remain the same, but the contours of those issues have changed significantly, mm-hmm. in large measure because of the abuse of the term religious freedom by the religious right. And I've come to understand that if we're going to succeed in our arguments against our opponents on this question, we have to define religious freedom in a way that's commonly understood and commonly understood for the good of all Americans, not the privilege of the few.
So what do you consider to be the most important issues you've had a chance to work on in 2015?
Even a month ago, I would have said that the biggest issues that we've worked on have been civil and human rights for people of differing orientations and for people of minority religions in this country. But I have to say, Welton, and we're taping this at a very difficult time in our nation's history, the one issue that seems to cut across every ethnicity, every religion, every demographic, every zip code is guns. And the culture of violence in this country, as exemplified through the use of guns in violent crime and in mass crime, is the physical expression of the culture of violence in language that's being promoted by some folks.
Mm-hmm. Jack, I never did really like asking myself this question, much less having someone else ask me this question, but I always found that the discipline of it was healthy. Is there something in particular you wish Interfaith Alliance could have done more on if there had been more resources?
Sure. There's always something we could have done more on. I would have liked to have been more out in front on the Religious Freedom Restoration Acts that are being promoted in states across the country. You know, 20 states have their own RFRA and 12 more are considering them, and they have very little in common with each other than the title. And I think that the project that we are undertaking for next year, the proactive project of trying to define what religious freedom means in this country and how to measure it, I think if we'd been able to do that earlier, we could have avoided some of the genuine hurt that's been done by people proclaiming they have a religious right to violate local law and the Constitution.
Mm-hmm. So what would you point to as the most satisfying achievement of these last several months?
As always, and I think you will agree with me, it's the people that I've met who are so deeply committed to human rights, civil rights, religious rights for all Americans, especially those who do so when they know it's not always in their personal interests. I had a conversation actually with a former board member yesterday. I'm not going to name him. You'll probably figure out who it is. And heard him talk about how the county clerk in a neighboring county, a very small county, has refused to issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples. And he was outraged by that. that represents a huge shift in his attitudes over the course of the years that I've known him. Mm-hmm. And he hasn't changed his religious position at all, his faith position on this. He just understands that the law of the land is the law. It needs to be followed. And that if people who disagree with the principles behind the law don't support the law has no meaning for anybody.
Mm-hmm. Is there something you would classify as the biggest disappointment?
Yes, I have to say the biggest disappointment for me is that we don't have the resources to bring our message to more people. I will say that I never considered myself much of a media star. I'm certainly no Welton Gaddy. But I have been stunned by the positive response that our social media and our public statements have received, the attention that we've gotten from national media outlets, local interfaith alliances, and just individuals. And I just wish we had more resources to push that message out there, because I'm persuaded that if you take away the whatever it is, 27% of likely voters in a particular election who are supporting a form of discrimination or bigotry, we're looking at something north of 73% of America who doesn't want to stand for this stuff.
People always have asked, why did you all pay so much attention to media? And I know how much you've been on national media this first year. And my guess is that you had your eyes open to something that I had to open my eyes to, and that was the value and the power of 30 seconds on a national media program. It is incredibly powerful. It's not only powerful for us, it's powerful for the religious right and for those who are sowing the kind of hate that we're trying to counter. We've got to get on there because there's not much progressive radio. There's not much.
Right. There's state of belief and state of belief. Media is a business, and we both know that. And the more outrageous the program, whichever end of the spectrum it's on, the more listeners it's going to get. And it makes it very difficult for those of us who present what I think is a centrist point of view. And even though a lot of people would consider us to be liberals or progressives, I think we're the mainstream of constitutional and religious thought in this country. Those of us who are pursuing that kind of an agenda are not getting the kind of attention that people who are willing to call names and scream out loud and make mm-hmm. fun of other people are able to garner. While much of the media spends its time clucking the tongue at the outrageousness of some of the actions that we see, they're not seeking out voices to the contrary that can present a calming and uplifting and healing message to America. So when we get a message out there, whether it's by social media, which is by our own efforts, or whether it is a quotation on the front page of the New York Times or in the pages of the New Republic, or even a negative mention as we got in the Wall Street Journal, it puts people on notice that they do not have to succumb to the kind of hysteria and hyperbole that has become the stuff of commercial media.
Mm, that's well said. What kind of priorities are you thinking about in relation to 2016?
We want to invest ourselves in this proactive effort, not just to measure religious freedom, but to engage scholars, thinkers, academics, journalists, from across the spectrum of the American faith community and people of no faith at all, to discuss what the meaning of religious freedom is and how that ought to apply in the upcoming elections in 2016. I think this remains an enormously important issue for most Americans, and that people who have secured their own sense of identity are looking for what that means in terms of what they share in common with other Americans. And I think we can provide that message.
You know, election years, national election years in particular, create a lot of teachable moments. And I know that that's going to happen in 2016. How would you describe your program related to the election next year?
My field is religious liberty. So the first thing that we're going to do is keep an eye out and our mouths open about issues of religious freedom and religious liberty in this country, and make sure that we do not have conversations on the campaign trail to the very best of our ability that set one group of Americans against another because of their beliefs or because of whom they love or because of any of the other things that are guaranteed to us as individuals by the Constitution and create a common ground for us as Americans. That will be my major message, and I'm hoping people will be listening.
Rabbi Jack Moline is Executive Director of Interfaith Alliance. As the organization continues its work to protect faith and freedom, to defend the constitutional underpinnings of our democracy, and to challenge unconscionable attempts to subvert the fundamental idea of religious liberty, your help is needed more than ever. You'll find information about joining Interfaith Alliance and becoming a supporter at interfaithalliance.org. That's interfaithalliance.org. Jack, it's always good when you're coming to the microphone. I appreciate you doing it today, and we look forward to doing it many times more.
And Welton, at the risk of sounding like I'm going over to the other side in a war that we're reluctant to fight, Merry Christmas.
Thank you. Happy holidays.
Thank you.